My talk tonight is entitled, When the Practice Gets Difficult. And I hope it's not going to be a difficult talk. It's actually kind of easy. Because you've probably always been well aware that our practice is challenging. It certainly has been for me. The hundreds of people I've helped begin meditating in introduction courses have almost all complained about how hard it is to control their attention. The mind can be like this wild young animal that just wiggles and runs around in any direction. It takes motivation, even to try to concentrate for just a few seconds. This is true despite the widespread idea that sitting in meditation is peaceful and relaxing. But in fact, both perceptions are true. It's difficult and it's relaxing. However difficult your meditation session may be, every second our attention is focused is a peaceful one, maybe even delightful, like when the puppy finally settles down in your lap. Once we're able to turn the attention inward and hold it there, we start to see a whole new dimension of our lives. It turns out that the wild attention that's been running around in our minds has created a huge mess. A lot of students first see what goes on in their minds and don't want to look at it anymore. They say, I can't do this. My mind just can't settle down. There are others who, after the intro course is over, they'll spend years looking for the zone where their mental state is steady and serene. They try and try to concentrate. But once they stop trying, the mind seems to go right back to the mess it was. Some people manage to concentrate for part of their sitting, and then for the rest of the day, hold on to the serenity this brought them. The mind can go back to being a wilderness in the background of their awareness, but they can recall the peace that that period of concentration brought them. This is nice, but there are seven other parts of the Eightfold Path besides concentration. And in the practice area, it's mindfulness and wise effort. Some concentration is necessary for mindfulness to be established. We have to be able to notice when the mind is just playing around with passing thoughts. But noticing this is invaluable. I think of this as the vein of gold that meditation lets us access. But you know, mining that gold can be really hard. The process takes us right up to and then through some of life's hardest experiences. when something awful happens, we respond with a long list of difficult thoughts and emotions. And some of them trigger feelings we had in past experiences. Dukkha can multiply like a virus. This past week, my wife was in a collision with our relatively new car. It was bad. The car may be totaled. But Carla wasn't hurt, fortunately. She just felt terrible, though, even though it was clearly not her fault. It was just an upsetting experience. And I was upset, too, when I learned about it. For a couple days, every time I meditated, I was bombarded by thoughts and feelings about this accident. And almost all of those thoughts and feelings were unpleasant. I realized that I needed to focus. I needed to get some concentration before my mind could do anything but keep making me feel worse. It took most of a sitting for my mind to steady. And then I was able to see that a lot of the thoughts swirling around in my mind were just not true. It was just like junk messages that you get on your phone or email that you can just delete without reading or listening to. With a little more serenity from concentrating again, I could then deal with my reactions to problems that were real. Those negative feelings that I was having and that everybody will have about whatever's going on in their lives are like injured children that just need to be heard and held. I needed to sit with them and embrace them until they calmed down. This was hard, but actually easier than it sounds. A parent or an older child will feel compassion as they try to soothe an upset youngster. And that state of mind, that compassion, is filled with love. It nourishes our hearts to feel love. And this makes compassion relatively painless, even when we're feeling it for ourselves. It helps to keep in mind that our suffering is not the event, but our reactions to the event. Part of the event that was upsetting me was knowing all the phone calls and paperwork I would have to deal with, because it's my insurance policy. But that was an unknown future. I didn't really know if it was going to be that way or not. While I was doing my meditation practice, I realized I just needed to deal with things as they happened. This wasn't a logical thing. It was, you know, one of those insights that are wordless, but very helpful. The challenge of mindfulness is to be able to hold our focus on the day-to-day ups and downs in what's called daily life practice, rather than avoiding those ups and downs through distractions like pleasant fantasies or by retreating into outright denial. the more we can be mindful during the day, the more often we can make peace with the truth of our ongoing internal experience. At the end of my first 10-day retreat, Joseph Goldstein congratulated us for staying for the whole retreat. He got a good laugh by noting that it wasn't the way most people spend a 10-day vacation. We laughed because during that time, we had all encountered deep places within us that were distressing. And we had accepted the challenge to just stay there with those difficult feelings and be with them and accept them and let them heal. Joseph told us about a friend whose son was sitting his first long retreat in Barre, Massachusetts. About midway through the retreat, the man called and asked Joseph how his son was doing, and Joseph said he was doing just fine. His friend asked Joseph how he knew, and he answered, "Well, because he's still here." If we have learned to focus our attention more or less regularly, then we're sure to encounter feelings, many of which we once tried mightily to escape or hide from. In our meditation, we are coming face to face with our dukkha, our suffering. Holding the attention there is a challenge daunting enough that many people choose not to practice mindfulness. Instead, they spend their meditation time striving to concentrate, or they stop practicing altogether. It's very brave to keep practicing mindfulness, whether it's all day for many days or occasionally over years. Many people have said when I've told them that I'm going on a retreat, "Oh, that sounds wonderful." And I've replied, "Well, it can be." We don't know what we'll encounter when we turn our attention inward. So to open ourselves to that experience again and again takes confidence that we'll be able to see it through. The way to end our suffering, or dukkha, is not to avoid it, but to go through it mindfully, feeling every bit of it, understanding it as best we can with the support of the teachings and our spiritual friends. It is challenging. But aided by confidence and faith gained through experience with this practice, we can accept that challenge repeatedly. I need to point out that there can be things lurking in the backs of our minds that are extremely difficult to process. Memories of trauma, for instance, or less shattering but still wounding events. It can harm us further if we force ourselves to confront them when we don't have support. Usually, the mind has a way of warning us when we're in dangerous territory, and we should heed those warnings. If this kind of material is coming to the surface, it's best to step back in your meditation and talk with a teacher, a therapist, or a close and wise friend. It's often said that the practice will eventually practice us. But until then, it's best to pause and use wisdom when we encounter powerful things like this in our path. If we trust ourselves and our practice enough to stay with the difficult parts of our lives, then our way of regarding life itself will begin to shift. To get to this point is brave, and you will deserve all the benefits which flow from accepting this challenge. What are those benefits? Well, for starters, confidence, which has allowed our practice to get us this far. It keeps us here, like the young man in Joseph's story. It keeps giving us the strength of heart to accept the challenge of this practice again and again. This faith in ourselves is a big help as we cope with our daily lives. This faith is not an unquestioning belief. It is built on investigation and experience. The Buddha said that we can be confident our practice is right for us when we try it and see that it works. With this trust, our practice will, by itself, gradually resolve mental habits that have plagued us for years. Let me emphasize the word gradually. The Dharma offers ways to work with mental habits that cause dukkha. On my website, RebeccaDixon.org, there is a course about the Eightfold Path. The part on wise effort offers exercises to end or avoid negative states of mind and to cultivate positive ones. After working with these for, say, a month, you'll be able to use them when future events call for them. Then one day you'll realize that some habits that reduced your quality of life have finally dropped away. As we continue to return to mindfulness regularly, we'll go through transformations in how we respond to situations that used to torment us. There will also arise new patterns in how we handle our emotions and relationships, and how we treat other beings and this planet. This process of change may at times involve some tumultuous emotions. That doesn't mean our practice has failed. It means we have learned to recognize and engage with our misunderstandings and the truths that are newly revealed to us. That can be difficult, but sticking with it pays huge dividends. However our practice grows and unfolds, it is fundamentally disruptive. It changes us. Meditation and living mindfully alter our perception of our world and ourselves. And it keeps doing so more and more profoundly until everything is changed, burned out. The literal meaning of Nibbana. But don't worry, that doesn't sneak up on you. It won't go that far until you're entirely ready. Thank you.